You're listening to Asbury University's Chapel Podcast, recorded live from our campus in Wilmore, Kentucky. Asbury's Chapel Service hosts speakers from around the world to inspire academic excellence and spiritual vitality. We hope you enjoy today's message.
Thank you, Jeannie. We're going to get there eventually, but if you have any compunction to follow along in Scripture, we'll be in Jeremiah chapter 1 here in a little bit. So if you want to go ahead and turn there. As I was thinking about the direction I wanted to go with the very few minutes that I have, I had a lot of material to think about. Honestly, more than I thought I would have. And I tried to direct my reflection toward things that feel closer to my life now and would seem relevant to what some of you either are currently dealing with or may be dealing with shortly. And as I thought about my life over the last 10 plus years, it occurred to me that one defining feature is that I feel like I have little to no idea what I'm doing each and every day. To put it another way, I feel profoundly unqualified in all of the spaces that I fill and all of the roles that I hold. I seem to face this constant question, how am I supposed to get through this, whatever this is, when I don't feel particularly gifted to be any of the things that God has called me to be? Let me back up to that 10-year mark, to my time here at Asbury. School was always something that I was good at. I worked hard and was rewarded with good grades. But when my senior year of college rolled around and all of a sudden that education journey was going to be over, I was at a loss. Before that senior year, the next step had always been planned out. One school year ended and another one began. When I graduated high school, I at least had the opportunity to choose where that school year would take place. But as my senior year here approached, I was dreading imminent graduation, because now I had to answer what's next. The only thing I knew for sure was that I was not going to go to school anymore, but that is one small portion of a very, very wide world. The other thing I knew for sure was that I wanted to marry my then girlfriend, Mariah, but I felt woefully unprepared both to go out into the real world and to be a husband. I was 21 years old. We had no idea where we would live. We had no idea what we would do for work. And that was scary. But for that relationship, I knew I loved her. So I stepped out in faith and proposed. So that's one thing, right? I wasn't going to school. I knew I was going to get married. What was I going to do for work? What are you going to be when you grew up was still a question that I needed to answer. I was a political science and Spanish double major. And for those of you who don't know, that doesn't give you a lot of direction for where you want to be for the rest of your life. So, naturally, I decided to put a pause on all decision-making, take a year, move across the country from my family and my newly minted fiancé to Tucson, Arizona, to live and work as a full-time service volunteer. Yeah, for those of you keeping track, that's 3 months after getting engaged, I was going to move across the country from my fiancé to try to discern my life's purpose through volunteerism and communal living. My wife calls this garbage can decision making, and while it may not have been the best decision, I just knew I had to do something, and that's what stuck. So, I'm a recent college grad. I'm across the country in Tucson, Arizona, living in a profoundly different context than that in which I had grown up, living with people I had never met before, and doing work that I never thought I'd be doing. See, my role as a volunteer was to coordinate an elementary school after-school program in South Tucson, and also help run a community garden for the residents that lived in a local housing project. And this is probably a good time to mention that never in a million years did I think I'd be working with kids. In fact, working with children is something that to this day I still have nightmares about. And this was probably the first example of that feeling of, what am I doing here, and God, why do you have me here? However, it was through my time in Tucson, through those various positions, that God began a work on my heart that continues to this day. Before I left on this journey of self-discovery, my dad made me a couple bookmarks as both reminders of home and as reminders of God's grace. My dad and I both share a deep love for reading, so him giving me these bookmarks as a way to kind of keep track of my reading progress throughout the year served as a potent reminder both of home and of things which bring me joy. And though I didn't know it at the time, one of these bookmarks would provide me with the closest thing to a life verse that I have. On one of those, my dad had typed out the call of Jeremiah from Jeremiah chapter 1. verses 4 through 10 is where we'll be. It goes like this. Now the word of the Lord came to me saying, before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. And before you were born, I consecrated you. I appointed you a prophet to the nations. Then I said, Lord God, behold, I do not know how to speak, for I am only a youth. But the Lord said to me, do not say, I am only a youth, for to all to whom I send you, you shall go. Whatever I command you, you shall speak. Do not be afraid of them, for I am with you to deliver you, declares the Lord. The Lord put out his hand and touched my mouth, and the Lord said to me, behold, I have put my words in your mouth. See, I have set you this day over nations and over kingdoms, to pluck up and to break down, to destroy and to overthrow, to build and to plant. It took me almost my entire year in Tucson to fully appreciate the comfort of this verse and the prescience that my dad had to gift me this particular passage as I was embarking on a journey that both filled me with fear and would have a profound effect on the context of my life. I'm not the kind of person who notices God's provision when I'm in the moment, so despite a full year of having Jeremiah's call in my hand, I failed to see the results of his promises as I was going through life in Tucson. However, when I came to the end of that experience, I could begin to see how God had answered my doubts in the same way he had answered Jeremiah's. I grew so much in that year, and despite showing up to my various jobs with significant doubts in my own abilities to be of service, I now had a full year of seeing how God had showed up in my inadequacy. Fast forward a few months, I'm back in Kentucky and embarking on another great journey, the start of a marriage. Did that volunteer program magically reveal to me my life's purpose? No. I still had no idea what I wanted to do with my life, but what I did know is I now had a wife, we had a house that we were renting, and we needed to buy groceries. So I needed to get a job. So during this season and the 4 or 5 years that followed, I learned one of the great lessons of Jeremiah's call. We have to trust in God's provision without a clear picture of the future. See, the job I got was working at Home Depot. It was less than ideal. The store was 45 minutes away. And within 2 months of having this job, I was moved to a full-time position on the opening shift, which required me to wake up at 3:15, 5 days a week, to work in a home improvement store as someone who lacks any level of general handiness or even general knowledge about 98% of what you would find in a typical Home Depot. Sometimes God's sense of humor will just make you laugh. But it was a job. It helped me pay the bills. And as we moved into the next phase of our life, it helped alleviate one other stress. See, about 7 months after we got married, even though I didn't know what I wanted to do, my wife did. She wanted to work with college students. So she applied to several master's programs and got accepted into the higher education and student affairs program at Baylor University. We moved, spent 2 years in a completely new context together in Texas. And because of Home Depot, I avoided the need to find a job once we got to Waco. So while I didn't know I wanted to work at Home Depot forever, I also had a deep fear of taking the time to look for new opportunities and thus missing out on the ability to provide for our life in Waco. But God didn't keep from pushing me into something better. This is where my swim career comes in. Swimming is the thing I know better than anything else, and it's the world that I'm most comfortable inhabiting. However, I'd always said that I had never wanted to be a coach. My temperament was wrong. I don't particularly enjoy working with people, and as I've already made clear, working with kids is something that fuels my nightmares. But these were all excuses I had made to myself over the years to keep me from taking that step back into the world of swimming. God took all of these excuses and said, "Do not be afraid. I am with you." So one day I received a call from a club coach in Waco. He said that one of his former swimmers and one of my former teammates had reached out to him and told him about me. I was caught a little bit off guard, but figured I'd give it a try, and I'm so glad that I said yes. Getting back involved in swimming was one of the greatest things of my life, and God used the connections I'd built here and the connections we built in Waco to show me what it meant to do something that actually pours energy and happiness into your life. And he did it by having me coach the youngest kids on the swim team. It was one of the greatest experiences of my life. Fast forward a few years and a few more moves. My wife, my dog, and I are living in Richmond, Virginia. She's the hall director of Virginia Commonwealth University, and I'm working at a bank with zero involvement in the sport of swimming. We've lived in 3 different states in a little more than a year at this point, and again, we were in a completely different context than we'd ever been. We were in a desert. We lacked the energy to make connections, we had no one we were close to, and neither one of us had a job that provided any significant enjoyment. We were struggling. But God knew what we had coming. That desert space in Richmond was preparing our hearts to answer the call back to familiar ground. The previous swim coach here at Asbury and the guy who had coached me had reached out and told me he was leaving and asked if I would be interested. I told him that I hadn't really coached in a couple years and doubted that I'd be ready to take charge of a college swim program. Then I received a call from Mark Whitworth asking if I'd be interested in chatting more and applying. While this came from left field, it also created a wholly new situation in our lives. Up to that point, my wife had been the one that had prompted every single one of our moves, so this would be the first time that we would be moving for me. And my sole selling points to be the swim coach here were I was an alum and I knew swimming. That was about it. I didn't see much on my resume that said I was an ideal candidate for the role, but ultimately, this move felt different. And while I felt extremely unqualified, being back home created a sense of hope for Mariah and I. As we were going through this process of moving again a fourth state in just as many years, we accepted the position, and as we were packing up and moving back, we found out that we were pregnant. So in the midst of moving, in the midst of settling into a new job, in the midst of figuring out how over my head I was with this job here, organizing fundraisers, learning eligibility and compliance requirements, making sure incoming freshmen who had never met me before had done everything they needed to do, and now finding out that I'm going to be a dad. Balancing all of that while trying to figure out how to build a work structure for myself in a profoundly unstructured position was frightening. And as we were navigating all of those decisions, I had never felt such a strange mix of apprehension and anticipation in my entire life. All of the familiar feelings of inadequacy that I've been dealing with for the last 10 years continued to rear their ugly heads. And the lack of preparedness for both this role and for my role as a father came creeping back in. I remember the first raw conversation my wife and I had as we were processing the pregnancy, and we were both scared of what was heading our way. I remember by the end of that conversation, the realization hitting both of us that God's timing is perfect. We are both planners, and Jeremiah's protestations of only being a youth and being unprepared ring loud in both of our hearts. Given our own way, we will plan everything to death and sometimes never take the plunge. This news of pregnancy was like God giving both of us the push, saying, "Trust me, do not be afraid." And Liam has been the greatest gift, and despite going into every single day as his dad feeling lost and unsure of myself, God has given me the most wonderful insights into my relationship with him through my relationship with Liam. Just like I go into every day as a father unsure of what I'm doing, I go into my job here every day with the same doubts, with the same crippling imposter syndrome. Yet God meets me in the same ways. The number of times I've been unsure of how to handle a situation, God presents a path to me that I never would have considered on my own. He places someone or some experience in my path that provides just the thing I needed to solve whatever problem is in front of me. I think the most beautiful part of the experience of these last 10 years is that I get to experience his promises one problem at a time. I can look back over this last decade and see his provision, even while I can look ahead and be unsure of how he will show up. I go into every day feeling like Jeremiah, like I'm just a youth who has no business being where I am. But over the unfolding of my life, I've learned that I don't need to have all the details. I don't need to have a perfect plan. I just need to do something to keep my feet moving forward, chasing God and letting him figure out the details. He wants to order our steps. He wants for us to put our trust in his promises, not because that means everything will be smooth sailing, but because he has prepared the way. The path of our lives isn't always straight and easy. It's not always easily discernible. It has times of incredible fruitfulness and times of incredible barrenness and desperation. However, God sees and knows each one of us in all of those circumstances. He promises us food for the journey, to set us over nations and over kingdoms, to pluck up and to break down, to destroy and to overthrow, to build and to plant, to do works of incredible power in our ordinary lives. We don't get to know the full plan, but we get the joy of knowing that each step we take is ordered by a loving and caring God. I know I face each day unsure of myself and feeling like I'm the least qualified, least deserving person to hold the positions that I do. But I also know, because I can look back on my own life and see all the times that God has met my inadequacy with his provision and his comfort, I know I can trust in his promises and lean on him to make perfect my imperfections. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me. As I was thinking about what stories to share with you guys today, there's just so many things after you've been alive longer that you could talk about. And I have a lot of good stories because the Lord has done a lot of great things in my family growing up and things like that. But in the last week or so, in conversations that I've had with like four different people, it seems like the same theme just keeps popping up. And it's this idea of process. And the process is a spiritual one. It is the process of development and spiritual progression. So in one of the conversations that I had is with my sister-in-law, and she was saying to me that God is so good because he invites us into the process. And I thought that was so interesting, that word, because we don't normally think of, especially in a difficult circumstance, of that as an invitation. It's like, that's a gift, right? You're being invited into something, especially when it's hard. And she's going through a thing, so I thought, yeah, it has a lot of meaning for her to say that. And I know before, there's been a few times in my life when, you know, I have sort of learned that and been able to, once in a while, say, Lord, don't even take me out of this until I've actually got everything you want for me here. It's really hard. I'll tell you what's even harder is to watch your children go through a thing. That's really hard. And it was hard for me to watch my daughter Maggie when we were moving here because she was mourning the loss of her home in Georgia. And so it wasn't solved very quickly. And, you know, it was just things that we just had to watch the Lord work through and bring her out of and help her. And she'll be stronger for it. She's made a lot of wonderful friends here, and it's been very, very good. But I think, you know, with my kids and everything, you just kind of want them to be able to go from here to here and without having to walk through everything in between. But at the same time, it's like, well, if we do that, you know, rescue and everything, we're maybe robbing them of something that God has to show them and about his own character. So for me, okay, being a math teacher, this whole idea of process and spiritual development for me just sort of goes or speaks to me through the difference between like integral growth and the density property. And what I mean by that is when you count by integers, you go from 1 to 2. But when you are looking at this density property, what it is, it's a saying that you have in between every two rational numbers, there's another number. In between those, there's another one. In between those, there's another one. In between those, another one. And it's very dense. And so for me, I was thinking, you know, really spiritual growth and process, in my mind, it just makes more sense to that. You don't go from here to here. You know, it's this whole line, and you just have to go through all the things. However, spiritual development doesn't always have to come through hard times. There's really good processes, really excellent things that God brings to us for us to go through. For me, it was a lot harder for me to move to Georgia, and I had to leave all my family and friends back in Missouri. But after some years, I was invited into this group of women who had decided that they were going to read the chronological Bible. We were going to read the Bible from beginning to end, chronologically. And so we all got our chronological Bibles. We all bought the same one, and then we had our own individual Bibles. And we would meet once a week, starting at about 8:30 in the morning. We'd probably end up around noon. And the idea was to go through about 10 pages at a time. And sometimes we'd just get, you know, through a paragraph, because you just get more in depth. And I started noticing it was interesting because different themes would sort of rise up from our conversations and how we were looking at these truths about God, his character, his plan for salvation, and the redemption of all people. It was really great too reading the chronological Bible, because for me it really fit the major and minor prophets in to the story of Israel. Besides all that learning and taking place with each other, we also prayed for each other, we rejoiced together, we, you know, went through difficult times together. We saw family members, you know, healed of deep hurt, and we saw a father come to the Lord really late in life. And so, anyway, it was just this, on this day, like, we saw a lot of interesting things. And so, curiously enough, one day, on the day we happened to be discussing the divinity of Jesus, this woman knocks on the door, and she was with a group who did not believe that Jesus was divine. He was the only Son of God. And so we're like, oh, hey, you know, there's a whole bunch of ladies in here talking about the Bible and discussing Jesus. Would you like to come in? And she kind of like looked in there and everything, and then she just took one look and she turned around and she hightailed it out of there, and which was too bad. But I thought it was interesting because that was the topic we were discussing, and we saw that over and over again. There'd be things that would happen on the day or things that we were talking about. And so Sonia, who was our leader, she always said, you know, this is going to take us 7 years to get through this. And, you know, we would meet most of the time, and sometimes if we couldn't have at least half the people there, you know, we wouldn't meet. But I went back, I was checking my notebooks and the things that I had taken a lot of notes in over the time, and I had written this. On May the 19th at 12 p.m., 2017, we read the last verse of the last chapter of the book of Revelation. It took us 7 years, 7 months, and 17 and a half days. And then we cried. Actually, we started that Bible study on October the 1st, which is 16 years ago today. So this mug that I brought with me, Sonia came over to my house when I was getting ready to move here. And she said, I want to give you this because this mug represents what we did together. She said, this is heavy, strong. It's very solid and substantial. It's just full of depth. This week also just happened to be reading something my husband wrote about John Wesley for Asbury's webpage. And I was like, oh, here it is again, this whole idea. And I'll just read this. He wrote, one of the key debates within the Wesleyan holiness tradition is whether Christian perfection, or as it is often termed, entire sanctification, is an instantaneous second work of grace or the gradual working of the Spirit. Is it crisis or process? Wesley consistently argued that salvation must produce holiness of heart and life, but he never viewed the process as a ladder of ascent of sorts, as ancient and medieval Christian mystics had. He never envisioned a stage in this life where one has arrived and can go no further. Instead, Wesley viewed Christian holiness biblically as a linear movement forward. Like, that's exactly what I was saying, trying to say. There's a verse in my life that I feel like is an overarching guide, and it's Romans 12:12. Be joyful in hope, patient in affliction, and faithful in prayer. I don't think that you're in your joyful in hope have to walk around happy all the time. Although I will tend to, I'll tell you that over my lifetime, I think Christians do tend to laugh a lot more. And if I could sum up my teenage years with one word when I was in my youth group, it would be laughter. However, I did grow up with a couple people who became professional comedians, so it was a lot of fun. But I think that joyful in hope is more of a state of peaceful gladness because of what we have and are having. We have the promised Holy Spirit. We have the hope of glory, salvation from sin, and a constant process of renewal. Truly, he has given us everything we need for life and godliness, so there's a lot to be joyful about. Again, in our affliction, God has things he wants to teach us. He wants to show us things about restoration and depth of character, your own and his. And so he's inviting us into that. And then lastly, that being faithful in prayer. I'll just give two examples. The year I did move to Georgia, my father contracted pulmonary fibrosis, and this is a terminal illness of your lungs. And so we had driven up to Missouri and everything, and I was visiting him. We both knew this was the last time we'd ever see each other. We knew that. So I had to drive back to North Georgia the next day. But I asked my dad, would you pray with me? Would you be willing to trust God for your salvation, ask him to forgive you of your sins? And he said, yes, I want to do that. And this openness, this acceptance of God in his life is something that we had prayed for 25 years of my life. And it was like he just touched the hem of the garment. I mean, he's like the parable of the workers who came in at the end of the day and were paid the same amount, right, of those who came and started working in the morning. But that was a blessing in my life. And so he did pass away about 2.5 weeks after that. But more recently, in terms of prayer, in the last couple of years, I've been praying for my oldest daughter. She was living with her guy, and I just kept praying, Lord, they just don't need to go another day without being married. And then on February 17th this year, she FaceTimed me after I got home from work, and she's like, Mom, we got married today. So I just started crying. And she had already called her dad, and she's like, yeah, Dad laughed, and you're crying. So I called her like 2 days later, and I said, look, you know, what was it? Like, why did you just up and decide to get married? And she goes, Mom, I just realized that we did not need to go one more day without being married. And I was like, praise Jesus. So in July, we hosted a second ceremony in our backyard for her, for them to declare their vows to one another in front of our family and our friends, and it was really very beautiful. So this process that I found over the extent of my life that we're being invited into, you know, it happens while we're being joyful in our hope, patient in our affliction, and faithful in our prayers. It comes through the hard times, and it comes through really blessed times. It comes in the quiet moments, and it comes holy, and it comes densely, and it comes linearly. It's a good life. Thank you.